brave.
When it comes to discussing our bodies, we often get a little uncomfortable. Women's health issues are often seen as off-limits. Taboo topics we just don't talk about. It's time for that to change. Let's talk. Welcome to the Brave Mama podcast, where we are going to do exactly that. Discuss everything, from periods to pregnancy, motherhood to menopause. No topic is off-limits. Join Stephanie Thompson, the Brave Mama and author of The Day My Vagina Broke, as she asks other brave women about their personal health challenges and triumphs. You will learn, laugh, and cry as Stephanie finds out everything you wanted to know but were too afraid or embarrassed to ask. So, grab a cuppa and enjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Lowdown with Brave Mama. This is your host, Steph Thompson. If this is the first time you're tuning in, I want to extend a really warm welcome to you. And if you are one of our long-term listeners, then welcome back. Today's episode, our guest is one of the first women that we are speaking to who lives with pelvic organ prolapse and has not yet become a mum. That's right. Natasha was 18 when she discovered that she had prolapse. Now, I don't want to give too much of her story away, but I do just want to let you know that in the introduction, you're going to hear me call her Simone. And you might think, oh, Steph's losing the plot. She doesn't even have the name of her guest right. I've only ever known her as Simone. And I think we need to address this particular point is that when Natasha first started her prolapse journey and started talking about it openly, she had so much fear of the shame and taboo of talking about women's pelvic health, and then the extra layer of being so young, and then the extra layer of not yet being a mum. Because in her world, all she'd ever heard of and seen and was watching were women like me who had prolapse because of childbirth. So Natasha started her Instagram account and called herself Simone as a pseudonym, as a level of protection, I guess. And I am so proud of her. I'm so proud of her sharing her journey with us today because she is so brave to be able to do that. We're going to kick off this interview in just a moment. But just before we do, I do want to stress, if you are someone living with pelvic organ prolapse and you feel like no one is understanding you, seeing you, supporting you, and loving on you, come and join us. Come and join us at the Brave Mama community. We have a free Facebook private space where you can feel seen, heard, loved, and supported. There's a direct link in the show notes where you can join us today, or if you head over to Podbean where you're listening to this episode, there's also links where you can join us there too. All right, let's get into our chat with Natasha. Hello, Simone. I was going to say good evening, but it's actually good morning where you are, right?
Yeah, it is the morning time. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I have been following your journey for quite some time via social media, and we've connected obviously because we've got lots in common, but then there's also so many parts to your story that are very different to most of the women in our community because most of us are mums, right, with prolapse. So it might be helpful just to start to share your journey with prolapse from probably the beginning, I'd say.
Gosh, okay, that may be a long journey to take you on. But
let's just say, when did you first find out about that word prolapse to start with? That's probably easier.
Okay, so I actually didn't find out the word prolapse until I was on my year abroad in Denmark. And at that time, I'd had my symptoms for about 2 years, and I'd noticed the bulge protruding out of my vagina for about 2 years. And I decided not to go to the doctor because I'm a silly person. No.
Well, how old were you though? And I bet you were quite young.
I was 18, yeah, at the time, but I think, obviously, as I've said, there's a lot of stigma surrounding that topic and going to the doctor about down there or whatever. So I just didn't feel confident enough to go at the time, and I just felt really anxious about it, and I just especially as I wasn't sure if it was just how my anatomy was meant to be. And sure. So my worst fear was going to the doctor and then them just being like, yeah, everything's normal, like that's how it's meant to look. When I first did notice my symptoms, I did tell my friends that I was living with at the time.
Okay.
And they were like, oh, maybe it's your G-spot, maybe it's just a spot. And I was like, I don't want to seem rather ridiculous and go to the doctor and then be like, it's your G-spot, and I just be embarrassed. So I was hesitant to go to the doctor because I was under the conception that it would be somewhat embarrassing.
Of course.
You know, there is a lot of stigma discussing that. Even at school, we're not really educated about our anatomy. And so I didn't, you know, want to look silly, I guess. And so, yeah, I heard the word prolapse when I was around the age of 20. And I decided to go to the doctor finally about this mysterious bulge. And that was not actually the first word I heard. I actually got misdiagnosed with a septate uterus. So prolapse was the second thing I had heard. So I was originally misdiagnosed. And then obviously the word uterine prolapse was brought into play. And yeah, that's really when I was diagnosed with that. But the journey leading up to that was probably quite lots of bumps in the road, like obviously getting misdiagnosed and all the tests that had to be done. And I was in a foreign country. And so there was a lot of language barriers with that.
Oh, so you were still doing the discovery in Denmark on your own?
Yeah. I got diagnosed in Denmark on my year abroad when I was alone.
Wow.
That was completely self-inflicted, as I didn't go to the doctor until I think it was 3 weeks before I was meant to leave for Denmark. I finally decided to go to the doctor and they were like, okay, we need to get you a referral in to go to the hospital. And I was like, yeah, I'm actually leaving. So it wasn't, yeah, the best move on my half. So yeah, but I was very much, I moved to Denmark without knowing anybody. I was the only one from my school to move there. So yeah, I didn't know anyone and I had to navigate the whole foreign healthcare system. So yeah, I guess that was a bit of a struggle.
Wow. I can, like, just being overseas on your own at that age is so vulnerable. And then separately, having some idea that you've got this bulge and potentially a prolapse on your own is, and then put those two together. My God, you are a phenomenal woman to have to do that. I can't imagine, like, I really can't imagine how that was for you mentally.
Yeah, it was quite tough, especially when I was misdiagnosed at the beginning, because obviously my first person I turned to was Dr. Google. And obviously that's not a good friend to have. So yeah, and I found it quite hard because I didn't have anyone to confide in. And even now, I think it's hard for people to understand unless they experience prolapse themselves. It's something hard to wrap your head around. And so I think even if there were people, my friends and support network out there, it would have been much easier. But I also think there would have been some level of not understanding what I was going through. But yeah, it was really tough because the hospital that I had to commute to was an hour and a half away. So yeah, I had to get the bus there. And I remember once I was getting a hysteroscopy. It was rather embarrassing because they didn't tell me that the water would come out afterwards. And so because they insert water up there to expand things and just
have a look.
Yeah, and I was walking home from the hospital appointment and all the water just flooded onto my trousers and it looked like I completely wet myself. So then I had to get the bus, and to make things worse, the trainee nurse who was helping me do it sat next to me on the bus on the way home. And I just, yeah, it was
I would have said to her, hello, did you not think to tell me that I was going to be coming home in a wet patch? I mean, I know we're giggling, but that is really unacceptable to do that to someone, a young person, anyone, to not give you that information that was going to happen to you. I'm so sorry that happened to you.
That's fun. It makes for some good stories to tell.
You've definitely got a very mature head on you, because it takes a lot of strength to get to that point where you can say, well, at least it was a story. Can I ask, when you were misdiagnosed, because I think you've just mentioned it there and it's not something I'm overly familiar with, what did they diagnose with you first, and then how was it re-diagnosed, I guess?
Yeah, so I was misdiagnosed with a septate uterus, and then following that, I think they just sent me to another hospital to get a second opinion. And I was seen by people higher up in the chain within the gynecology department. And so I was seen by the head of the gynecology department. And then he did a vaginal examination and decided that I actually had a prolapse. But I think for me as well, that was quite intimidating, having a male at such a young age. I just think it was a lot to go through. Like, now I'm quite immune to having vaginal examinations, but I think that when I was much younger, I found them quite intimidating. And I remember they used to be very painful, and I used to probably end up in tears most of the time because I just found it quite invasive. And so now I have the confidence to usually ask for a female, or got to this stage where I don't really mind having a male as long as he can do his job. So I just, at that time, I found it quite intimidating. So that was a lot to navigate to, as well as everything that was going on.
Absolutely. Once they had diagnosed with the uterine prolapse, did they give you a grade or any more information as to how you could live with it potentially? Because being so young, I can't imagine they offered you surgery.
So they gave me grade 3. I think the grades are a spectrum because obviously I don't have grade 3 all the time. So it's 2/3. But treatment-wise, they advised against surgery. That wasn't on the cards. It wessn't really discussed. It was more pessaries and physios and pelvic floor exercises. It was quite funny though, because I was given pelvic floor exercises and they were all in Danish. So I had the very awkward experience of getting my flatmate to translate them all. And I, at this time, would probably say I'd spoken to her about 3 times. And then I had to ask her to translate these exercises, and she was really nice. She even demonstrated how to do them. But that was a bonding experience in itself. But it was just, the letters also came in Danish, so I had to get her to translate them. And I remember when the first one came and it said pregnancy department, and she just looked at me and was like, we weren't on those terms yet, but she was just like, yeah, something going on with you.
Quick bonding. Nothing like a good vagina conversation, does it?
Exactly. Such an icebreaker. So.
Well, I'm glad to hear that she was helpful to you and very, was able to show you empathy, especially in that time of need. Did they, I don't know, this might not be a question for then, but since then, have you learned what perhaps led to that stage 2/3 uterine prolapse, considering that you hadn't had pregnancy or vaginal childbirth?
Yeah, so that's always the big question. People always want to know what the cause of their prolapse was, because sometimes you want to answer, you feel angry, like, this has happened to you. You're like, why me? There must be a reason for this. And so, I don't know, validating to have a reason or a cause of your prolapse. And they actually don't know still why I have prolapse. I mean, there's been speculation thrown out there, but I went to a collagen specialist once I was back in England, and he said that all seems normal. It doesn't seem to be, I don't seem to have flexibility. I can't even touch my toes, so I don't think that's something.
Okay.
And then when I went to the physio, she saw signs of perineal descent, which indicated chronic constipation. Okay. And so they think that's predominantly the cause of my prolapse, because I remember from a young age, I was quite constipated. Mm-hmm. I do have memories of me being really constipated.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a number of factors too. Like, I wasn't great with the breath work in the gym. I usually would hold my breath, which probably added to things. And I used to sometimes go to the gym twice a day because I suffered from like anxiety and depression in university. And so I would go there as a coping mechanism.
Sure.
And so that added on with the breathing, added on with the constipation, probably made a recipe for disaster. So
yeah. For our listeners, I think the general terminology in how we talk about prolapse is generally for older women, so definitely not 18, and women who have had babies. And when I first met you, I thought, wow, that's really uncommon. But tell me, have you met other girls who are similar age to you that it's just not spoken about?
Yeah, I think that's one of the large things that is that people at my age, and I have met other women who have prolapse my age, but also prolapse pre-childbirth. And I think that's one of the misconceptions, because whenever I went to a doctor's like appointment, honestly, I've started counting the times and the money I would make from people who go, oh, but you're so young, or like, but you haven't had children, or, you know, this is rare, isn't it? At the beginning, it just felt so invalidating, because you don't want to be seen as an anomaly. You don't want to be seen as some mutation or something.
Yeah.
And so especially when I was first diagnosed, it left me feeling extremely alone. I just felt like I thought that I was the only person on the globe with this. And now, after starting my Instagram, I have met many women who have prolapse pre-childbirth. I actually have a group chat for that, and now it's exceeded the number of people you can have a chat in Instagram. So it's like 36, wow. I think, people in the group. And there's one girl who's as young as 14 when she first noticed her prolapse.
Wow.
And so yeah, it's just amazing to meet other women and people my age who have prolapse before childbirth, and it just unites us as well, because we're seeing of like, you know, the unique cases or whatever.
And it's your community, because I resonate. As soon as you said you felt like you were the only person on the globe who had this, I think so many members in our space say the same thing, like, oh, why me? How come it happened to me? My mum never had this, or my sister, like, they never really talked about it, and they feel like they were the unlucky ones.
Yeah.
Until they start talking about it, opening up, and then join into communities like yours and mine. Like, oh, actually, they look around and there's hundreds of people feeling the exact same way. And I think this is where we've really got to take this condition and this whole women's pelvic health space into the next realm of research, right?
Yeah, definitely. Especially for those in a young age, like when you Google papers on that, there is none. Like, there literally will be one odd one, but there's no research done in that sector. And I think that's something that really needs to happen, because there are women that out like me who want research done on that, and we don't want to feel like we're the only ones out there, because I know that we're not. Like, if I can reach 36 women just through Instagram, just think about how many women there are actually out there experiencing this. And something that I find very interesting is my grandma actually recently noticed a bulge coming out of her vagina and confided in my mum about it. And because of I'm going through this, and my mum was very knowledgeable about prolapse and everything, and she was able to say, oh, do you think it may be prolapse? And obviously my grandma knew nothing about what prolapse was.
Yes.
And so when she looked up the symptoms, like, they all like resonated with her. And so now she's going to the doctor. And I think, what power would it be if every woman would be aware of this condition? And then we would be able to go, do you think it may be prolapse, rather than getting a diagnosis or something 4 years down the line, or like having to turn to Instagram. It would be so powerful if, you know, people were aware of this and they could even prevent or receive an earlier diagnosis. So
I love that you said that. Imagine if we could be teaching our future girls, my girl's only six, about constipation, about how to care for her body, about how to exercise and still be able to do the things that they want to do, like sports and weightlifting and at the gym, but in a way that is supportive of your pelvic floor, not potentially doing damage. And it was only through one of our interviews in our podcast, actually, with a lady who specializes in pelvic health. Her name's Bernadette. And she said, Steph, unfortunately, you're not going to like hearing this, but the damage to your pelvic floor, the level of dysfunction it's at now, there could have been other factors leading up to childbirth. Like childbirth is not always the reason why women develop prolapse. Like chronic constipation as a kid and you know, to particular types of exercise, if you're a dancer or a trampolinist, an athlete, a runner, all of those things all add up to, and it's genetics as well, I believe.
Yeah.
All of those things can contribute to it. So if we could find out the links between those, learn from it, teach it to our girls, hopefully we won't have to have these support groups in 20, 30, 40 years.
Because I actually remember my mum, she got quite upset when I said that chronic constipation could be a cause of my prolapse. She was actually in tears over it because she felt so guilty. She was like, what could have I done better as a mother? Maybe I could have prevented you having this prolapse. And obviously it's not her fault, because we're not really educated about what chronic constipation can do. Like, she did take me to the doctor and everything, and the doctor said it was a phase thing. He didn't really give much information on it, and so that's why I think it's so key to have information out there for mothers too, so they can help with that. And
100%, and I really feel for your mum, Simone. Like, as soon as you said that, I was nodding in agreement, because as a mum, there's this extra layer of guilt to think that you have to fix and protect your children more than yourself.
Yeah.
And I know my little girl has suffered bouts of constipation to the point where she's been in the hospital. And now I'm aware of this. We never let it get that bad again, because we know better, so we can do better. So your poor mum would be actually probably feeling a whole lot of guilt for that. And you're right, it's not her fault. She didn't know any different, right?
Yeah.
Interestingly, I spoke to a surgeon for this for this season. We've recorded an episode and we talk about this particular thing, research in this space, and he shed some light on it for me, which I'll share with you. He said, prolapse is not an area of research that's kind of sexy, because, well, it's not sexy. It's not sexy at all, is it? Face it. But the researchers who go into PhDs and things like that, who are interested in this, they often want a resolution quickly, like as in they want to find a problem, research it, solve it within a few years. The issue is with pelvic organ prolapse, he said, to do longitudinal studies, you're going to need it like a 10 years to see some difference. So I'm like, okay, now I can see why it wouldn't be sexy to someone who wants to do their PhD. But this is why we're having this conversation, in the hope that someone knows someone who wants to study this. I would put my hand up any minute of the day and say, you want to research on me? I'll be your guinea pig. Let's do it.
Actually, on that, surgery has recently been suggested to me for the first time, actually, by a gynecologist I went to see about my pessary. It was noted to me, which is news to me, that I have a long cervix. So she said that my cervix is much longer than usual, like, and so it was suggested that the pessary may not work for me because of the length of my cervix may just end pushing it out anyway. And so she recommended that one of the options I have is to get my cervix shortened. And so that was one of the options that was thrown out there. Obviously, I wanted to try the non-invasive method first of the pessaries, but that is one option that could be considered in the future if the pessary doesn't work out for me. But yeah, that actually is the first time that surgery has been suggested, because she did say it wouldn't impact my fertility. It would just be taking some of the cervix off so that it wouldn't bulge out so much. Because she said that if I had the length of a normal cervix, I probably wouldn't notice my prolapse as much. Oh. But it's just because of the length of it that it's coming out so much.
That's interesting. I'm trying to visualize, because obviously, and you'd probably be the same, you're on a learning journey to visualize what your anatomy actually looks like.
Yeah.
It's nothing like the textbooks.
Yeah.
The picture of the perfectly round cylinder is not exactly what a vagina looks like. So that was going to be my next question, actually, about fertility and pregnancy and the likely forecast of that, because women around my age who have gone to see a surgeon and they say, oh no, look, we won't talk about surgery until you are certain you don't want any more children because of the weight of the pregnancy. And then of course, a vaginal birth if people choose to do it like that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Like, I'm curious to know what this, is it a urogynecologist that you saw?
She's a gynecologist. Yeah. So, but yeah, obviously that's just one opinion. So I would be keen to seek another, but she is one of the best that I've seen. So, but yeah, it's the first time I've heard of it. And when I tried to do more research on it, it's not really something that's quite common. And she said that she did put her hand up and say, I'd be the youngest person to have it done.
Okay.
But yeah.
How does that make you feel?
You know, part of me is like, you know, like, get this thing. I don't know. I've just become so tired of it, to be honest, especially since up and down of the pessaries. I've just become a bit frustrated and just a bit annoyed, to be honest. I'm just reaching the part when I'm just like, obviously, pessary was meant to be something that really helped me. I've heard so many success stories from it, and it did help me for a short term, but obviously it did cause me pain. And so I'm just getting to the point where, obviously, I was noticed my symptoms when I was 18. So it's been about 5 years now, and I feel like I'm just going in circles and I haven't actually found something to help me feel less symptomatic. And so, yeah, it's grinding on me a bit. And so I said to my mum this morning, I'm taking a break from my prolapse. I was like, we're on a break. We're going to reconvene and make up soon, but we're not in contact at the moment.
Wouldn't that be nice if you could just take a little short holiday and not feel sympathetic?
Obviously, that doesn't happen, but I'm just like not talking. I'm giving my prolapse a silent treatment for the
That's gorgeous. Do you mind if we talk a little bit about your pessary journey? Because I think that can be helpful. And I say journey because I really hate it how you go for your first pessary fitting and it's almost like this is going to be the fix. So you go in there really hopeful. And I don't know if you had a similar experience, but you go in really hopeful. They put it in, they say, go around and walk the car park and come back out. And you do that. You're like, yeah, that was great. And then you leave the appointment, and as you're walking back to the car, it goes plop and it falls out in your underpants. You're like, shit, that's not what's meant to happen. And so I say journey because I now have learned I'm up to my 8th different style of pessary.
Oh, wow.
With all different sizes. And I still haven't found my perfect match, I will say. I haven't been able to swipe on any of them. But I haven't stopped trying. And so tell us a little bit about what was the first pessary that you were introduced to?
Yeah, so the first pessary was the ring pessary without support.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, was done in Denmark. And that one, I guess my prolapse kind of came through the pessary, if that makes sense, because there's no support. Yeah, it just came through the hole. And I got it inserted for me. And I found it really painful, the insertion, because I do have a hypertonic pelvic floor. And just in general, I found, because I was so anxious, I was just tensing up. And then for the first, I would say, month or a few weeks, it was absolutely fine. And then afterwards, it started causing me a lot of pain. Now, I say this because I also have another condition called lichen sclerosis. And at that time in my life, it had been flaring up, but it hadn't been diagnosed. It was in the very early stages. And so it was causing me a lot of pain, but it hadn't been diagnosed. And so I was receiving no treatment for it that was working. And so those kind of conditions can combat one another, because so the pessary, I think, was reacting with my lichen sclerosis. And for those of you, I don't know, maybe I should say a bit about lichen sclerosis. Like a chronic inflammatory skin condition. It's thought to be autoimmune that affects your genital. So that was really painful, and that causes itching, burning. It can cause like scarring, bleeding and stuff like that. It's just really painful. And at that time, I was just, it was being passed off as thrush. And so I was just applying thrush cream. It wasn't helping. No. So now I've got this pessary going in too. No. And I think it was just all a bit too much for me. Yes. And stress can also flare up lichen sclerosis. So I think that was also not helping the situation. And so one day it was causing so much pain that I tried to remove it myself, but I was unable to, and so I had to make an emergency doctor's appointment, and my doctor actually had to remove it for me. Mm-hmm. And then after that I tried the Q pessary. Yep. And that had the same issue, and they thought it was because it was my hypertonic pelvic floor, so they gave me physio exercises to do for that, and so they said try again when your pelvic floor is more yep. relaxed. Yeah, but obviously I think it was my hypertonic pelvic floor as well as my LS. Yeah. So when I got back to England, obviously I got diagnosed and I received steroid cream, which I apply daily. And that has really calmed things down. I haven't had a flare up since then. And okay. So now they thought it was a good time to try a pessary. I tried the ring pessary with support.
Yes.
And I'm going to be honest, I was waiting for the NHS for this, and that's been almost a year and a half. And I was just, getting so frustrated. And I really wanted to try a pessary again because I didn't really see any alternative options. And so I went privately. I went to this appointment thinking, because, you know, it's a long process, I thought it was just going to be an initial consultation, and she just whipped out a pessary and she's like, let's put it in then. And I was just very caught off guard. I think my palms were like sweating. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing I was caught off guard, because I couldn't build up in my head. But I was also very caught off guard, and my mum was in the room too, which is fine. So I got the ring pessary with support, and that was inserted. And then it was just rather embarrassing because I was asking obviously about intercourse and this pessary.
With mum in the room.
Yeah, with mum in the room. And she was like, it depends how deep the penetration is and how big the size of the... And I was like, this is not a bonding experience I want to have with my mum right now, to be honest. And then she said, I can go in more detail if you like. And my mum was like, I'd rather not. And fair enough. So the gynecologist found it rather funny because she has a daughter too. So when I left, she was like, don't forget to try the two P's, penis and periods. And yeah, it was just rather not comfortable. But yeah, when I tried the pessary, I couldn't actually feel it at all. I think the sizing was bang on. I think when I tried it in Denmark, the sizing was a bit off, and so I could actually feel the pessary. Yes. Whereas this time around, I couldn't feel it at all. And yeah, it was all feeling so great, actually. I don't know if you saw my story, but everyone's like, you're smiling now.
And dancing. Yeah. I saw you dancing in the field.
And then that dancing in the field came crashing down. And that's why it's called like the prolapse roller coaster, because it really is full of ups and downs. And then my pessary just started, I don't know if it was my pessary, it could have been my lichen sclerosis, I don't know. That's the annoying thing about having two conditions in one area.
But
it started really hurting and paining me, and it was hard to walk, to be honest, and it was like itching. And I tried it for a while with the pain, hoping that it would kind of
get used to it.
And then one night, probably nothing happens good for me after 10 p.m. I think I've worked that out. Like, I just get too tired. Yep. And I'm taking this pessary out, and my boyfriend was asleep at the time. And then I couldn't get it out. I was literally there for about a good 30 minutes, getting so annoyed at myself, like trying to pull it out, and then it would slip out my hand. And I was getting more and more annoyed. And I was like, I wanted it out more and more because I couldn't take it out. I was like, I don't want this foreign object in my body that I can't take out. Like, I was getting really angry at it. And I came in my room and I was like crying. And my boyfriend woke up like, what just happened in the past 20 minutes since I fell asleep and now you're crying? But yeah, I just wanted to take it out. And finally, I got it out and I still have it out now while we speak, and it's in a little container.
in the naughty corner.
But yeah, so it was working really well when it did work. I had sex with the pessary and it was absolutely fine. I forgot, he forgot it was in. So it wasn't until about 2 hours later that I turned to him and I was like, oh my gosh, you just had sex with the pessary in. I asked him like if he felt it at all, and he was like, to be honest, I wasn't even thinking about it.
Amazing. That is so amazing for both of you. Because I think if you were to think about it, as you know, as you're about to have sex, it would probably make you really tense, like, oh, I've got to take it out.
Yeah, and
you'd lose the momentum of being in that moment. The fact that he couldn't feel it and he was able to share that, you guys have that language and that conversation, is phenomenal.
And one thing I find quite amusing is a lot of women I've heard, they get their, they turn the pessary into like the guy helps or the partner helps and take the pessary out. And I breached that conversation with my partner. And now bear in mind, he faints at blood tests and he's just very much, he was like, I'm not sure I'll be up for that. But yeah, I think that's really interesting how a lot of women incorporate into the foreplay.
I've never heard of that, actually. And that's amazing that you shared that, because I've never heard anyone talk about it like that. And it's planting seeds, good seeds.
Yeah, that's what a lot of women have said to me. They said their partner helps them take it out. But yeah, so for me personally, the pessary, for whatever reason, didn't seem to work. But I'm going to have to go back to the gynecologist and find out what's going on. It's just a bit frustrating, but
Simone, have you ever seen any of those Facebook groups where they are women with prolapse and LS at the same time? It's very common.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that at all.
I'm going to find a link.
Is that on Facebook?
Yeah, I'm going to find a link for you, because there's a specific group for LS women who also have prolapse. I'm going to find it, because I've seen it. I have been part of that group, thinking that at some point I had really, well, I was told I had chronic thrush in my 20s. Now when you read all the symptoms of LS, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was me. There was no thrush cream, there was no what, you know, they insert the little pessary type thing, the treatment, nothing ever worked ever. That's why I searched it. I'm like, is this a thing? I wonder if it's a contributing factor. I wonder, like, it's just that curious mind. So I'm going to find that link, and if I can share it in the show notes, I will too, because we may not be alone here.
That's really interesting as well, because I posted it on my story and I said, does anyone else have both of these conditions? And quite a few people said yes. I'm just thinking maybe research in that area could be good too. It would be much short term, guys listening out there.
I'd say, who needs a researcher? Let's do it ourselves. Damn it. We do everything else ourselves.
But I just think it's really interesting, because I think a pessary is a cause of a lot of concern for those with both LS and prolapse, because they're worried that it will flare it up or something. Yeah, and so I think there needs to be more information about that, because I know specific types of pessaries aren't good for women with LS. They can flare it up, so it'd be interesting to know which ones are good.
Yeah, and I think, are you talking about the material it's made from too, right, the pessary?
Yeah, the material and also like the shape of it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm pausing because I'm nodding. I'm like, we're onto something here, my friend. Watch this face, everyone. Watch us go. So tell us, Simone, in your daily life, I'm guessing I'm doing the math, young 20s now.
Yeah.
How do you manage prolapse? And I love how you talk about it being painful, because not even people with prolapse who might have a stage 1 have no clue how much pain we live in. chronic pain every single day. Tell us what the day looks like for you and how you manage that.
Yeah, so in the morning, I would say I'm probably least symptomatic. Recently now, since the pessary has been taken out, my prolapse has been there in the morning as well. I don't know why, but usually before the pessary, I would like wake up and my prolapse wouldn't be noticeable. And it would be more so as the like day progresses that it would get more and more noticeable. So usually when I go to shower at the end of the day, my prolapse is bulging out. And also on my period, it's a lot worse. So yeah, that kind of, and before my period, like before my period starts. And sometimes when I used to exercise before my breathing mechanics and I went to see a physio about that, my prolapse would get worse after exercise. So what I'm doing to manage that,
other than trying to survive.
Yeah, I'm quite bad at management strategies. I think I'm still in denial stage of my condition. Although I actively speak about it, it may come across that I'm, you know, fully acceptant of my condition. You know, I live in harmony with my body, but that is far from the case. I'm still processing and I don't think I've actually come to terms with myself having prolapse. I think I went into autopilot mode.
Yes.
And so I do physio and pelvic floor stretches. But I, having said that, I'm going to hold my hand up. I don't do them every day. I know I should, but I think it's hard, like one, when you're in denial, because what I think is when you do these kind of strategies, it is a reminder that you have prolapse. And that's why I have a love-hate relationship with them, because I know they will make me feel less symptomatic, but they also are a constant reminder that I have prolapse. So yeah, I do the physio exercises that I've been given, and then I also take it day to day. So if I wake up and I feel really extremely symptomatic, I probably won't go to the gym that day.
Sure.
And I've given myself the room to do that. I used to be so hard on myself and just kind of like get on with it, whereas now I just am more in tune with my body and what it's feeling and just listening to it, because I used to just have abuse my body, basically make it go to the gym so often and stuff, whereas now I kind of, you know, listen to it more often.
Yeah,
and I think that's really important when you live with prolapse, to be able to understand when you feel most symptomatic and track those patterns. Because for me, I really noticed a pattern, and I would go to the gym usually in the mornings because that is when I'm least symptomatic.
I
rarely experience pain, if I'm honest, and I don't know if my pain's related when I do to my prolapse. I usually get inner thighs are really, really paining me, but I'm not sure if that's a correlation to prolapse. I think that's more my hypertonic pelvic floor. But yeah, that my inner thighs usually will really, really hurt. So that's sometimes, but I use a hot water bottle and that kind of eases the pain.
Yes.
But it's more so like a bulging feeling.
Heavy?
Urinary incontinence I experience.
Yeah.
So when I laugh or when I sneeze, sometimes I pee myself, only slightly, but yeah. And also I pee like so often, because they did find that my prolapse was pushing my bladder, like causing it to incompletely flush out. And so there was stale urine in there, so I did have quite a few UTIs. So yeah, I guess like with that, and the squatty potty has really helped me. Obviously, you can just use a footstool. I just use a footstool. I don't have squatty potty, but that elevation has really helped me. Yeah. So I guess that's it, obviously.
That's a lot. Yeah. I think to do that every single day, you have to constantly think about even how you go to the toilet.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, because when I moved to Ireland recently, I worked at an animal sanctuary, a seal sanctuary in Ireland, and there was no place to elevate my feet. And I did notice that my prolapse was feeling more symptomatic at that time. So I think that's really important. So when I got home, I was like some people miss their beds. They miss it. I was like, I miss by a stool that I go to the toilet with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I do take things to prevent me from being constipated. Yep. So like magnesium and then Laxido. Yeah.
To keep it regular. Yeah. That's like looking at all different elements of your body. So yeah, that is a lot to think about. I guess for you right now, and I heard you before saying that you're quite frustrated with it. And after 5 years, you're wanting to look for a solution. It'd be interesting to follow your journey, especially if surgery is a path that you are going to consider. Now, look, yeah. I know you've started an amazing community on Instagram. Let's talk about that a little bit before we finish up, because I think what you are doing and helping so many other women is really important.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm just trying to share my journey. Obviously, it's nowhere complete. I think by the time this podcast comes out, I'll probably be doing another part of my journey as well. So this is like part one of my journey, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, I started my blog because exercise used to be my outlet for stress. I used to go to the gym to vent off things. Yes. And obviously, when you're first diagnosed with prolapse, the first thing you turn to is Google, and that's full of like black and white information about exercise. Things you can't do usually is top of the list rather than things you can do.
Yeah.
And so it's very like, I don't know, stop jumping, stop
heavy doing lifting, stop running,
abdominal stuff. So it's very limiting in the exercise that you can do based on the internet. And so I saw the gym as an anxiety cause instead of like an anxiety outlet. And so I didn't really have an outlet to go to. And that was one of the key reasons why I started the blog. And I was working out on my carpet at the time because it was during COVID. And I texted my partner and I was like, I want to start a blog and I want to vent down everything that I'm feeling.
Good.
And he was like, okay, I'll make you a first draft. And so while I was working out, he set up the whole website for me.
Beautiful.
And yeah, as soon as like I'd finished, I literally splurged everything I was thinking into blogs, and I blogged for about 2 days, and then I set up the Instagram to promote my blog. And it's actually funny because now it's turned more into my Instagram. But yeah, I never expected to meet so many women who had prolapse. Mm-hmm. And now it's more so become somewhere where I can talk about it, but also reassure women they aren't alone, and also create a space where you can receive educational content. Because I think one of the things about prolapse, we don't receive any information besides Google. And so I like inviting healthcare professionals on, physios on, so that women, when they are diagnosed, can go to somewhere else and receive more backed up research than Google. Yeah, so it's just amazing though how many women reach out to me and say they have prolapse and that they're feeling exactly what I'm feeling. And so I try to present my journey as raw as possible. We're not positive all the time. Like, although I come across as positive, that's definitely not how I am most of the time. And so I try to show when I am feeling crap and everything like that. So I guess that's my Instagram, and just trying to reassure women they aren't alone. And I felt so alone when I was diagnosed, and I don't want anyone to feel like that when they're diagnosed. Because I think sometimes in our society, if you complain, you're either like told to buck up or just get on with things.
Yes. And stop scaring women, stop sharing your scary stories. Yeah. And I hate that.
Or just like keep positive. And we should have a space where we're allowed to moan, because you know it is tough what we're going through. And it's also nice to talk to other women who experience. One of the most beautiful things that happened to me is I actually met up with two of the girls who were in my prolapse before child birth group chat, and we went out for dinner, and we were just talking about our vaginas the whole dinner. And it was just so funny how this is the first time we were meeting, but we were so like open and honest, and like we were just discussing everything.
So good.
Yeah, and it was just so nice as well to have someone else experience and understand what you're going through, because I know my friends try their best, but it's nice to have a community that understand me and understand what I'm going through. So yeah.
And they can potentially then share their tips, because
when
when we've got that lived experience, even if you've got a professional gynecologist who has studied this, that's amazing. If they've not actually experienced what it feels like to live with prolapse, I feel like sometimes they're only regurging a textbook.
They're better addressing the physical side of prolapse, where obviously like the mental and psychological side and the impact that that brings, like having prolapse, isn't really discussed by medical professionals because that's not their area of specialty. And so having the community of women to be able to help you through that part and know that like you're not alone going through that is really helpful for me. And I hope that's helpful for a lot of women out there too.
Absolutely. And I know I think that's how I found you initially, was through the blog and then Instagram. I feel like there's going to be something next for you. Maybe a podcast. Start a podcast, yeah. Simone.
Yeah, I am planning something in the works, but it's very much an idea at the moment. And I'm just trying to get it into a concept.
Yeah, amazing. And I love that you've just got this really positive outlook on a condition and a situation that can be really quite dire at times, because overall the positivity is a choice, right? We all have that choice. And I know for some women who might be listening, especially if you're just newly diagnosed, be like, what are you talking about? How can you be so happy? Because quite often people will message me and say, how did you fix your prolapse? And then I have to tell them that no, I still have it exactly the same, like, well, why do you look so positive? It looks like you fixed it. No, I've just worked on every other aspect, mental, psychological, emotional well-being, and physical stuff is very much the same. So I'm so inspired by watching your journey, because I see that you're doing similar things in terms of choosing that positive space and then helping others do the same.
Yeah, exactly. And I also try and as well give myself days to be negative too. There was one example of when it was, I think it was Christmas Eve, just like been, and I noticed a lump on my cervix, and I was just getting so annoyed because I was like, this is a holiday, you know, but obviously prolapse don't take any holidays
ever.
And so I think that sometimes obviously it's a lot to orientate, and it's okay to allow yourself to feel jealous of other women. I think that's a really key thing to remember, because whenever I went to the gym or still go to the gym, often I look at other women and I'm just like, oh, you guys have it so easy. I know like it sounds bad saying, but I think it's also important to see like prolapse is obviously to other people invisible, and so it's hard. 50% of women have prolapse. Someone at the gym could have prolapse, you just don't know it. So I try and focus on things that I can control rather than things I can't. So I can control how often I do my pelvic floor exercises. I can control what mechanisms I have in place to make myself feel better about myself. Mm. And things I can't control, I try not to dwell on too much. And I also try and think that everyone else has, like, every person has their own crap. Like, everyone's going through different things. And so it's important to bear that in mind. Like, people could be looking at you in the gym like, oh, I wish I had, like, you know, the body confidence like her. And then inside you're like, oh, you know, I hate my body. So, yeah.
100%.
Yeah, that's really important to remember.
Always think that someone's always got it worse than you, someone's always got it better than you, but your feelings are your feelings, and they're so valid where you're at that moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that's one comment that actually annoys me, when people go, oh, at least it's not cancer. I've had that said to me before, and I just think there's no spectrum of your feelings are valid. You shouldn't be thinking, oh, someone in the world has it worse, because like your feelings are still valid, and to you they can still be horrible what you're experiencing.
I've had cancer, and I can tell you I'd much rather have that. again.
Oh gosh, as I didn't realize.
No. And I think it's a really good thing that you bring up, because even though it was really shit at the time and I would never actually really wish for anyone to go through what I went through, there was a beginning and there was an end. So the treatment started, the treatment finished, I was in remission, and then I was cured. There is no end with prolapse. There is no particular treatment. There is no light at the end of the tunnel for prolapse, which is why I say when people compare cancer and prolapse, it's like, oh, you've got no idea. So I can speak to that because I've had experience in both, but there is nothing that is going to say to me, okay, prolapse will finish in 6 months. We'll just do this and then you're going to be good.
Yeah, I think that there's like no spectrum, or like everyone is valid in their own feelings, and you shouldn't say feeling depressed. And I was like, oh, but I don't feel as depressed as I felt 2 years ago. And she was like, that you shouldn't compare your mental state now to 2 years ago. It's completely different scenarios. So I think it's similar now. You shouldn't compare yourself or compare situations. You should just focus on how you're feeling. So, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I feel so blessed to have had this opportunity to talk with you, because I know when you connect online and via Instagram, it's lovely. But then to sit down and have a good cup of tea and a good chat, I really appreciated your time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, especially globally. Like, I feel we are able to connect with so many women globally through Instagram. Like, obviously, you're from a completely different side of the world to me, yet we're still talking here on the podcast about prolapse, something that connects us. So thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Just before we finalize, where can women find you on Instagram? Actually, I'll put a link in the show notes, but you let us know where they can find you.
Yeah, so it's living_with_prolapse, so you can find me there, and feel free to message me. You can ramble or anything. My messages are always open.
Thanks again. Wasn't that just amazing? So being able to hear Natasha's story, I hope that it helps you understand that prolapse is not just an older woman's journey, someone who's been through menopause, someone who's been through pregnancy and childbirth, but in fact, it affects all of us. And the key takeaways for me from this discussion with Natasha was that you absolutely have permission to ask for a female doctor for internal examinations at any time. Now, I know this may not be possible for everyone, because either the location of where you are, if it's rural, and there are no female doctors. If this means the difference between you receiving support and an internal examination or not at all, my suggestion would be to be able to take the time, money, and energy required to travel to your local capital city where you can have access to a female professional to help you, because you deserve that. The second takeaway is Natasha talks about how it was really validating to be able to have a diagnosis, but to still not understand the cause of it, I think could be a hard headspace to be in. And for me, I think it's always been about childbirth and the use of forceps has been talked about. But in all fairness, if we really think about what we did as a young child with constipation, as a teenager, as a young adult, and all the things that lead up to the care and support of our pelvic floor throughout those years is probably a much bigger and better picture to be looking at. So if you are one of our listeners right now who's already living with pelvic organ prolapse and you feel like you understand the cause of yours, perhaps it's time to start having conversations with your own daughters right now about how they can protect, how they can preserve, and how they can best manage their pelvic floor to give them the best chance of hopefully eliminating some of those risk factors for them to be able to avoid prolapse. Now, we know it's not always avoidable, but any type of risk minimization can surely be the right step forward. And the other thing I just want to add about having a diagnosis, I want you to know that it is not set in stone. If someone says to you that you have a stage 2 pelvic organ prolapse, it can go either way. Meaning, if you see a women's pelvic health physio and are able to get rehabilitation to get it back to a level 1 or better, then that's amazing. But please note that if you do nothing about that, it will only progressively get worse. Prolapses do not fix themselves on their own by doing nothing. So I hope this is your call to action, or whatever you want to call it, that helps you understand that you are worth and your body is worth having the professional help that you need. If for whatever reason you don't even know where to start, please send us a message on Instagram via a direct message and say, "This is me. I'm not sure where to start." And we can share with you some more episodes that might help you on your journey to getting the support that you need. And just before we finish today, here's a really quick message from today's podcast partner. Okay, ladies, you know that this show really has a strong focus on prevention. So looking after your pelvic floor should start before you even think about becoming pregnant. Did you know that the Continence Foundation of Australia have a free pelvic floor health booklet? You can download it now for free from www.continence.org.au, or just pick up the phone and call the National Continence Helpline on 1-800-330-0066, and you can get free and confidential advice too. We would like to thank the Continence Foundation of Australia for supporting us and the women in our community. Until next week, bye for now. Brave,